Bienvenidos and welcome to the Jacobin Sports Show. I'm your host, Matthew Miranda, here for episode number 99. We're just about there, people. One episode away. 99 episodes. You may have noticed a stretch between episodes 98 and 99. I feel I should let you know. I have been struggling with depression. There's been a lot of stuff going on that's been difficult and heavy, and it's all kind of hit one after the other. A lot of cancer, including some people very close to me, and just a lot of stuff. So it's been hard to do much of anything. Like every task has been Herculean, seemingly. It's hard to not just want to sit in a bed. Sit in a chair and just sit in a chair. Like, it's been hard. So trying to work through that, and today's episode is a part of trying to work through that. Today's episode will be very different. I want to try something different for this one. It's episode 99, and I've, as with all of these episodes that have neared 100, I've been trying to think about, usually for just a quick little note, you know, what the number 96 signifies, or what I think of when I think of the number 98. And I got to 99, and like 99 is very, for me, just very easily, obviously, like I think of Wayne Gretzky when I think of the number 99. But I was thinking a little bit about Wayne Gretzky. Wayne Gretzky is a significant athlete in a number of ways to me. And so there's, I wanted to focus on that for this episode rather than doing the usual, let me talk about five or six things happening or interview a guest. There is a guest who I think I'm going to have on. It's been kind of tricky back and forth, but maybe for next one. But for this episode, instead of doing the usual sports buffet, I wanted to just zero in on Wayne Gretzky in particular and talk a little bit about why this one particular athlete had positive influences in even areas outside of sports. So if you will indulge me, I've talked on the show before about how when I was young, I got into a lot of sports through reading, like through newspapers was how I first got into it in the 1980s. You didn't have streaming and cable and all the options that there. And I was lucky. I lived in New York. Like, I could see two baseball teams. I could see two basketball teams. I could see three hockey teams at the time. Like, I could see more than most, but like, it wasn't like it is now. So for my brain, especially before I read about sports a lot, before I started watching sports, just because the newspaper was much more a part of my day than, you know, at 7 years old, I wasn't going to be like watching sports on the one TV in my house. There was five of us. Like, we generally had to watch things that held a common interest. So if I wanted to get sports, until we got really, until we moved upstate, until I was maybe 10, we never had two TVs. So sports was often consumed through the newspaper, and therefore numbers became really a big part of what sports was for me. I have that kind of brain anyway. Baseball was really like just chef's kiss for any brain that was predisposed to patterns and probabilities. And, you know, baseball has all these magical, mystical numbers of great significance, like 300 and 30 and 100 and 20 wins and 200 strikeouts and 61 and 400. And then football was a weird, quirky thing to read about, because football would have numbers that got into the thousands and rushing yards and passing yards. And football numbers were kind of wild, and I tasted the way candy does, like just when the corner of your eye catches like a pink firework going off. Football was very distinct in that way. Basketball math was very much like everyday math, street math, round numbers, 10 rebounds, 20 points, 50 wins, 100 points. It's a very like logical, coherent, familiar underpinning to all of those systems of math. And then hockey comes along, and hockey math has this completely electric effect, because hockey math works with smaller numbers than the other sports. There's only a couple goals in a game. There's only so many opportunities for points, even saves, which there's a lot of. You get like 30, maybe 40 in an explosive game. It's not the same numbers you get in football or basketball. But hockey math like was so exciting because it quantified. First, hockey just has this beautiful language to it, because it would, you know, it wasn't all conference. It wasn't Eastern and Western. But also, hockey quantified things that you figured at the time all sports should or would if they could, but they didn't or they couldn't. Like, there's the hockey assist, which is the pass that leads to the pass that leads to the goal. Basketball should 100% track hockey assists. I'm sure they do, but if they publicize that data, if we knew so-and-so, right, gets, you know, 6 hockey assists a game, like, it would lend so much more insight and appreciation for certain types of players who don't get assists because they're getting the assist that leads the pass, that leads to the pass, leads to the basket. Hockey also was where plus-minus was always a statistic that now has become kind of the NBA's like de rigueur, like stat of the era. Hockey numbers were always very pure. 50 goals, awesome. 100 points, hey, that's an MVP number. And then there was this Wayne Gretzky, number 99, Edmonton Oilers. And I'm living in a time, it's just after, it's I'm coming into sports consciousness like right after Muhammad Ali has basically faded, and he was the greatest. And Michael Jordan was just coming into his ascendancy. There was a guy named Magic. There were all these great nicknames. The Knicks had a Bernard King. But there was this guy called the Great One, which is like a hell of a name to take. Like, that's a hell of a label. The Great One. Like, there's only one, and they're capital G great, and it's you. And it probably undersold him. Like, if you count the year that Wayne Gretzky's first year in pro hockey was not in the NHL. It was in a league called the World Hockey Association. And he played in that league 1 year when he was 18 years old. If you count that year as the beginning of his pro career, then the first 9 seasons that Wayne Gretzky was a professional hockey player, he was the MVP of his league. And 10 of his first 11 seasons as a professional, he was the MVP of his league. Who does that? Like, think about what an enormous deal it is when a young, like Victor Wembanyama this year has been beyond even what I think people hoped for that he would be in the NBA as the number one pick, as this 7'4", unprecedented, you know, basketball chimera. And he's having an amazing rookie season. Like, he could win Defensive Player of the Year. He's not going to be MVP. His team is still, you know, loses most of their games. He's not even going to be, like, an all-NBA probably player. Who knows? I don't think he will be. He's certainly not going to be MVP. But, like, that's not a slander. It's, guys don't show up and do all the things. He's pretty much shown up and done about as much as you can. LeBron James was not MVP his first year, as great as he was. Michael Jordan was not MVP his first year, as great as he was. It just doesn't happen. Oh, unless you're Wayne Gretzky, and it happens the first 9 years that you play, and 10 of the first 11. He led the league in scoring 10 times. He led the league in goals and assists in the same season 4 years in a row and 5 out of 6. I don't know how many players have ever done that in hockey, like led the league in goals and assists. I question how many have ever done it 4 years in a row and 5 times total. Like, I'm just picking a couple easy out. Like, look at this great Wayne Gretzky stat. Look at that great Wayne Gretzky stat. There's so many of them. And it's not like I grew up and saw a lot of this. Like, I grew up in Uniondale on Long Island, which is the home of the Islanders. It's literally where the Nassau Coliseum is, where they played. So in the early 80s, the Islanders were the, like, dynasty of dynasties. They won 4 Stanley Cups in a row. And the team that the dynasty that was coming up trying to surpass them at that time were the Edmonton Oilers, led by Gretzky. So as a kid in Uniondale, even though we were Ranger fans, like, we probably heard a lot more about, I probably heard more about Wayne Gretzky than a lot of American airspaces did. But in the newspaper, where you're reading numbers, that's where the scale of these exploits, like, really start to smack you in the face. Like, everything I just told you about, you know, how many MVPs and how many scoring titles, I didn't know that when I was a kid. But what I did know, every Sunday, the paper would run, newspapers in the sports sections would run expanded statistical profiles. So in the Monday through Saturday newspapers, they would run, like, the top 10 scorers, the top 10 pitchers or hitters in baseball. But on Sunday, they would run it to, like, the whole league. It was, like, glorious. You could see everything. And looking over all the numbers and all the sports, so they did this for all sports. They would do it for baseball. They did it in the winter for football and hockey and basketball. And a pattern starts to emerge. Like, I would notice numerically that the difference between best and second best, like, was often very, very close. Bernard King, in 1985, led the league in scoring for the Knicks, and he was 4 points higher than Larry Bird. That's not a huge, that's 2 baskets. That's not a huge amount. Daryl Strawberry, when I was a kid, led the league in home runs. He had 39. He had 9 more than the second place hitter did, Glenn Davis. Those are simple numbers. 4 points, 9 home runs. You can count those on your hands. Those are simple counting numbers. Wayne Gretzky, at that same time, every single year, was finishing 60, 70, 80 points or more ahead of the second leading scorer in the league. The second leading scorer would have had to increase their output by 50% to equal Gretzky's. By comparison, that's like in the NBA. If you're scoring 30 points a game and you're second, but the guy in first is scoring 45. Like, it's an obscene gap that doesn't, you don't see that in anything. This is the most, to me, this crystallizes just the insanity of the brilliance and the endurance of Gretzky. Because this wasn't just like he was really great for 3 or 4 seasons and he was just pretty good. Like, he was the best for forever. And this really, to me, makes it really shine through. In Gretzky's 9th season, he led the league in scoring. He had 183 points, which was 75 more than the second place finisher, Jari Kurri. So that 75 point difference between first and second was as wide as the difference between second and 205th, Ulf Samuelsson, for those who remember the Samuelsson brothers. Gretzky was as far from second as the guy in second was from 205th. And that was Wayne Gretzky's 9th season, when he had already done this 8 times prior. What was remarkable with Gretzky, and that I really identified with a lot as a young person who was coming into a love for sports and who was already starting to make a connection that I can use sports as a way to understand or impact other things. He didn't look obviously better than everybody else. And at the time, the best players that I knew in every sport, like, they looked like great athletes. Lawrence Taylor looked unlike everybody else on the football field. Daryl Strawberry was this tall, you know, long, just beautiful baseball outfielder. Michael Jordan, Mike Tyson, like, these dudes looked like the kind of athletes who dominated the sport that they played. Gretzky was not big. He was not obviously fast. He was not obviously, he looked like a guy in skates. But as a young kid, I was a good athlete, especially at thinking the game. And I looked for players and for stars to emulate who were like high IQ types. Keith Hernandez was someone I could aim for, although he smoked cigarettes. And I knew somehow, without knowing how I knew, that Keith Hernandez probably did not go to church as many days a week as my family did. So they would probably not let me grow up to be Keith Hernandez. Patrick Ewing was really cool, but he was 7 feet tall. I was never the tallest person in my class. I wasn't short, 6 feet tall. But like every year of elementary school, you know, when they would take those old class photos that would show everyone standing in like three rows of kids, there was always one girl and one guy at least taller than me. I was never freakishly tall. I didn't smoke and I wasn't crazy tall, but I could be smart. Just looking at what it did for Gretzky, that kind of success was absolutely something that I thought about when I was playing sports and would run into situations where friends or teammates would be like mentally defeated the moment they saw the other team. They would decide that those guys are bigger, those guys are stronger, like we can't. And seeing players like Gretzky always made me immediately instead have the thinking of, all right, like, where do I have an advantage? How am I going to use it? And that principle not only applies in sports, but just gives you confidence in a lot of situations that, okay, no matter what I just walked into, I can control what I can control. And I can do my best work where I know I have my strengths. And that's a really useful thing to glean from this great athlete who I will never meet in my entire life and will never have any idea of impacts that he may have had on other people. Second dimension of Gretzky's significance to me. In a few weeks, this job that I've had writing for a video game for a few months is going to end. And in a couple of months, I've been ghostwriting a book. That's going to be done also. And when those two things are done, after a very rare and appreciated stretch of time earning a living wage, I am going to be back to not having any idea what my future holds. Teaching kind of comes and goes. I don't always know when I'm going to have classes. That's not new. What is kind of new is this feeling that I'm running out of time to make certain decisions. I am now closer to 50 than I am to 40. My age is increasingly a negative on my resume. If you contrast this to, say, around 1997, when I was a college undergrad and there was a sense of endless possibility, and if that sounds corny or trite, and you are not closer to 50 than 40, maybe it will when you are. At that time of life, Wayne Gretzky was in the latter years of his career, and he was a New York Ranger. The American essayist Elaine Scarry, S-C-A-R-R-Y, wrote that the reason we stare at beauty when we see it is we're trying to immortalize it, that we understand intrinsically how rare that combination of symmetry and proportionality and perfection is. So when we spot it, our eyes lock onto it as this mortal attempt at preserving something that we know is both fleeting and eternal. Speaking only for myself, that's pretty much why I watch sports. There's a buffet of interesting stuff to take from it, especially as obviously we do on the show. There's so much stuff around the game, not just the game. The game itself is fascinating. All the stuff around the game, there's so much to talk about, especially in this age of bread and billion-dollar circuses. But at root, it seems something that's astonishing in its aspiration or execution or climax. That's what I want to see. I want to see something. That I would want to see last forever if it could. Manchester United just had this happen this weekend. If you saw their FA Cup quarterfinal win over Liverpool, it was an incredible game. United tied the game with a couple minutes left in regulation time. Then they fell behind in overtime, tied it again late in overtime. At the very end of overtime, They give up a corner. So it seems like the last play of the game is going to be a Liverpool corner. And Liverpool, you know, is dangerous. Like, oh my God, maybe they're going to lose on this play. And instead, it turns into a United rush all the way up the field to the other end, culminating in the game winner. And they've advanced now to the semifinals. Like, incredible. I'm not a United fan, but like, you could feel nothing but like, unless you're a Liverpool fan, like nothing but just incredible electric joy. They'd already had 4, 5, 6 shots on goal that missed by just inches, many of them from Marcus Rashford. So Amad Diallo, who had the winner, his shot perfectly off the post into the net and just added this touch of delight and perfection to a moment that had sent 75,000 people mostly into instant ecstasy. Like, that's so rare. That's greatness. That's so rare. So in the late 90s, Wayne Gretzky's playing for the Rangers, and even though, like, at this point 90% of his career is behind him, this is a rare instance of an actual, true, legitimate GOAT playing for one of my teams. That just doesn't happen a lot. There's not a lot of GOATs. And when somebody has them, they don't tend to let them go. And Gretzky, despite this being his 18th and 19th seasons in the NHL, he led the league in assists both years as a Ranger. The 1 year that he made the playoffs in 97 with them, he led the team in goals and assists over 3 playoff rounds. He had 20 points in 15 games. This at an age when 90-something percent of his peers are retired. The Knicks have never had a GOAT play for them. The Knicks, if anything, are famous for all the GOATs that they've almost had, all the close calls. Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, LeBron James, Michael Jordan in 1987. Rumor was he was going to, or after 96, he was going to come to the Knicks. Julius Erving. The Knicks could have had Julius Erving as part of a territorial debt that the Nets owed to them when they came over from the ABA. But the Knicks picked basically cash instead. They almost had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I just learned that David Thompson was interested. But the Knicks have never had a go. Man City is, of all of my teams, far and away the most successful. Not even close. They've done everything just about that you can do under Pep Guardiola. And then also, they're obviously the successes under Mancini and Pellegrini. But even despite that, City have been linked at points in the past few years with Leo Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo. They didn't land either one of them. The Mets ever having the GOAT is like, you know, a meaningful socialist American president. Like, you have to be like M.C. Escher to like envision that kind of shit. But the Rangers had Gretzky when he was still Gretzky-ing. Right as I was leaving high school and going out into the world, a world whose scale made as little sense to me then as it does now. Like, yes, it's big, but how big? And it's shrinking? How much? At that time, my family was falling apart. My friends were moving away. You know, but if entropy is inevitable, so is cheering for the underdog. And as underdogs go, few inspire more faith than one nicknamed appropriately the Great One. I never know how to say this next sentence correctly. So my kid has seen the first 3 Star Wars movies. Sorry, my kid has never seen, I never know how to say this. My kid has never seen the first 3 Star Wars movies. Now, yes, they have seen the 3 that were first released, the Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher, Harrison Ford. Yes, they've seen those. But the 3 movies that were released 20 years later, the Ewan McGregor, Hayden Christensen abominations, those are the first 3 chronologically. So I don't know what to call the originals anymore. I guess you can call them the originals. So my kid has seen the originals. They have never seen the Ewan McGregor or Hayden Christensen ones. Because their mother, rightfully, considers the films a waste of the precious gift of life and will refuse ever to show them to our kid. And I think they were right to do so. What's striking to me to step back and consider is what a completely different world I can measure just from Star Wars. What a different world my child and I occupy. This does all tie back to Wayne Gretzky again. When the Star Wars sequels, or I guess prequels, you would say, were announced, getting close to 2000, It was this enormous moment in a monocultural sense that may not make sense even anymore. But bitching about those films became as instant of a sensation as the original films had been. For me, for a lot of people, I think, especially my age, there was a kind of pop culture BCAD moment that passed once Star Wars went from 3 movies to 4 to 5 to 6. To my kid, though, those films mean absolutely nothing. My kid is young enough that those films are not even a blip on their radar. Like, shit changes, and eventually people stop noticing, and then eventually they just don't care. Susan Sontag wrote about memory and forgetting and loss and moving on, may have said that that kind of progression is healthy, and she may have been right. But Sontag died in 2004, which was long before episodes 7, 8, and 9 were released. Susan Sontag never saw Mark Hamill return to the big screen as Luke Skywalker 40 years after first creating the character. If she had, and especially if she had seen episode 8, The Last Jedi, easily the greatest of all Star Wars movies, and the beautiful conclusion of Luke's story arc, she may have felt differently about some things than she did. People spend a lifetime dying. How unerringly we find the past that unmake us, Mike Carey wrote. Wayne Gretzky, as number 99, endured as a symbol of greatness for the first really 20 years of my life. I cannot recall in all that time a single instance of him praising himself, hyping himself up, talking someone else down. And I'm not saying that, oh, you know, that's a better way of being, that he was like superior because of that. But as all of this is an expression for what this athlete ultimately meant to me, for a kid like myself who lived this very wild, technicolor life strictly inside the margins of a mind that he kept very tucked away from the world, the fact that Gretzky could be what he obviously wanted to be, you don't become Wayne Gretzky if from an early age you don't want to be the greatest hockey player there is. The fact that Gretzky could be that and seemingly have such restrained and cool about it, which suggested that he wasn't surprised by it. Like, I was too young to know what I wanted, but I knew that, like, whatever it was, I'd want to have that same level of, I'm so prepared that success is not at all, like, it's not a surprise. It's the natural outcome. And the fact that he could do it at least suggested that it was possible that I could do it too. And the fact that he did it for 20 years meant that the only proof of it was in the process, which is something that my brain often needs help remembering. So Wayne Gretzky, number 99, some kind of player. That is it for episode 99 of the Jackman Sports Show. Please email any thoughts, questions, suggestions to jacobinsports@gmail.com. Please also consider asking someone you love to subscribe to our Patreon. It helps keep the lights on. That's all for this episode, everybody. We will be back with episode 100 much sooner than episode 99 came. I promise you that. I'm just trying to line up one or two guest things, but we will be back with episode 100 very soon, including the brand new Jacobin Sports Show name. Good time to send in emails. If there's anything you've ever wanted to hear addressed or done on the show, shoot us an email, jacobinsports@gmail.com. Peace.